The pine needles felt brittle under my boots as I navigated the dense perimeter of the woods just outside of Greensboro. It was late afternoon, and the air held that heavy, stagnant humidity common to North Carolina in the spring. A group of local teenagers had been out here, likely looking for a place away from prying eyes, when they stumbled upon something that didn't belong in the natural landscape. I stood near the yellow tape, watching the forensics team mark evidence in a clearing that had become a final, lonely resting place. The silence of the forest was broken only by the distant hum of traffic and the occasional crackle of a radio. It was a scene of stark contrast, where life usually thrived, but today it only held the weight of a sudden and violent end. We spent hours documenting the position of the body and the disturbed earth surrounding it. There were no witnesses here, only the trees and the cooling ground. Every detail mattered because, in the woods, nature begins to reclaim its own almost immediately. We looked for footprints, discarded casings, or any personal effects that could tell us who had been there last. By the time the sun dipped below the horizon, we finally had a name for the boy who had been left behind. This was the beginning of the investigation into the death of Mickle Williams. I returned to the station to begin the process of reconstruction. Mikkel was only 17 years old, a student with a life that was supposed to be unfolding, not ending in a shallow clearing. My first task was to build a timeline of his final 48 hours. We spoke to his family and friends, looking for the moment he stepped off the grid. The initial interviews painted a picture of a typical teenager, but as we pushed deeper, a secondary narrative began to emerge. There were mentions of recent arguments and a group of associates who seemed to move in the shadows of the local drug trade. I spent the next several days reviewing security footage from gas stations and intersections near the wood line. We saw a silver sedan circling the area on the night Mickle went missing. This wasn't a random act of violence. The location was too deliberate and the timing too precise. I coordinated with the narcotics division to see if Mickle's name had appeared on their radar. We learned that he had recently become entangled in a rivalry over small-scale distribution. It was a dangerous game for someone so young. The pressure of these rivalries often leads to a flashpoint of betrayal. I documented every contact he had made in the week leading up to the discovery. Each name was a lead that required a knock on a door and a formal statement. We were looking for the person who had lured him into those woods under the guise of friendship or a business deal. The breakthrough came when we executed a search warrant for digital records and forensic data. I sat in the lab with the technician as we pulled the logs from a series of encrypted messaging apps. The tape in this case wasn't a physical recording, but a digital trail of breadcrumbs that revealed a cold-blooded setup. We found a thread of messages between three individuals who discussed Mickle as a liability. They spoke about a shortage in the money and a plan to teach him a lesson that clearly spiraled out of control. I reviewed the GPS coordinates pulled from their mobile devices, which placed them exactly at the wood line at 2:14 a.m. One of the suspects had even taken a photo of a handgun resting on the center console of the silver sedan. Just minutes before the meeting, the forensic evidence from the scene corroborated this digital timeline. We found a single spent shell, olive drab in color, that matched the ammunition found in a suspect's bedroom during a subsequent raid. Ballistics confirmed that the projectile recovered during the autopsy was fired from a 9mm pistol we located hidden in a ventilation duct. The metadata on the photos provided us with a literal map of the crime. It showed the movement from a local apartment complex directly to the clearing where Mickle was found. We also recovered a set of blood-stained floor mats from the sedan. DNA analysis confirmed the blood belonged to the victim. The betrayal was documented in high definition through their own devices. They had recorded their movements as if they were untouchable. The legal proceedings moved forward with the weight of the evidence we had compiled. Three individuals were eventually charged in connection with the murder and the conspiracy that led to it. I sat in the back of the courtroom as the lead investigator, watching the prosecution present the digital logs and the ballistics reports. The defense attempted to argue that the meeting was a drug deal gone wrong, and that the shooting was accidental. However, the premeditated nature of the messages we recovered made that a difficult position to maintain. The jury spent 2 days deliberating before returning guilty verdicts for first-degree murder and conspiracy. The primary shooter received a sentence of life in prison, without the possibility of parole. The accomplices were sentenced to 30 years each for their roles in the planning and the disposal of evidence. Mikkel Williams' family sat in the front row, holding on to the only sense of justice the system could provide. There were no grand speeches or dramatic outbursts when the judge handed down the sentences. The courtroom was quiet, reflecting the somber reality of the loss. The case was officially closed, and the files were moved to permanent storage. I walked out of the courthouse and looked at the city, knowing that the woods where we found him would eventually grow over the clearing. The investigation had reached its finality through the meticulous collection of facts and the refusal to let a young life be forgotten. The records stand as a testament to the events that transpired in 2021.